So I'm delighted to say that we've got Justin and Marlene here. So Marlene's going to be talking to Justin and Ava, who's just finding somewhere to plug in their electric car. So we're so pleased to see you. I'm sorry you've had a bit of a difficulty getting here.
No worries, no
but
worries.
We're delighted that you're finally made it. So Marlene's going to talk to you a bit about... I know you've got loads to talk to us about today.
Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking maybe we should make a start and I know Ava will be along soon and yeah. then we can conclude her in it.
And we'll organise a wee cup of tea.
Get us warm, great.
And we've just been telling Justin that we've got our own climate emergency here, and I've got my seat positioned to avoid the drip that's coming through. We're on the ground floor, and this is a four or five story building, so it's obviously creeping down
a long way
somewhere.
Down.
But it has been. It's just non-stop rain for days now. So anyway, look, it's really good to have you over here, and. I heard you talk at the launch for the Commonweal Our Common Home Green Deal plan.
Great.
That was few months back.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Although you along with almost all the other speakers were usually started off saying that Robin had already kind of said what you were going to do, because we know what Robin's like.
Absolutely.
He'd spoken
comprehensively
at length. So. Now, I also know that, you know, you've been involved setting up Extinction Rebellion, getting it going. I'm sure you and Ava are not the only people who have been doing that, but I know you've been active in it. And you yourself are a forestry expert, that's right?
No, I'm an anthropologist. I work on community land rights in Africa with
that's
forest peoples.
Forest peoples, yeah, that's right. I was reading up a wee bit about that last week. So did you have any... direct input yourself into the Our Common Home plan, or
no? I was more, there was kind of conversation, a couple of meetings with Robin and others, where, as they were kind of developing their expertise. But I was more kind of clapping from the sidelines while getting on with the kind of more of the interventions from the point of view of protests and really bringing the issue to life, which has happened over the last year in a way that just hasn't happened before. People have really tripped over it into kind of going, when the water's dripping through the roof there, it's not just a rubbish building, it's actually we're in a very, very different climate than we were before.
Yeah.
So that's been what I've been focused on.
Yeah. What's your own opinion about that, about the Our Common Home plan? I mean...
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a really good framework to build with, and we're kind of hoping that we can work with Robin and the rest of Commonweal and Common Home team, looking towards a National Assembly, a People's Assembly, in probably in June, July, maybe outside Holyrood. We did one of these last year that was very much a kind of rebel camp, which is where Extinction Rebellion tends to be, taking action on the streets.
Yeah.
But this time much more inclusive and really drawing out the kind of the plans and what do we need to do to make a rapid transition in Scotland towards a just future. So actually a future that's much better for the vast majority of people. And for those who have too much, it's fine. They'll have a better life by knowing people around them are much better off.
And I mean, that's a message that resonates. I think that resonates quite strongly in Scottish society, you know, and it includes the better off in our society, who normally kind of go, well, if it's me that I'm paying a bit more tax or whatever, I'm fine.
Well, there's that wonderful study, isn't it, that the spirit level, looking at countries across the world and showing how, you know, the better off live longer when they're in a more equal society. The better off are healthier when they're... So it's not like a win-lose game. If, you know, if everybody's better off, then that actually helps for everybody. It's not like some are benefiting from this. They think they are, but they're not benefiting.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
It was an extraordinary study, because it's counterintuitive. You wouldn't expect that actually, if you're looking at Nordic countries where the equality is much greater, then the wealthiest 10% live longer and are healthier, compared to here, where there's much, much more inequality, or in America, where there's much more inequality. So you don't benefit, even if you think you do, from the top.
That is astounding. I haven't read that study, because you tend to think of very much of the studies that show, you know, that someone in Bear's Den has got a 20-year better life expectancy than someone that lives in Shettleston, but
there's a much bigger picture. We're all in this together, and I guess that's where the climate emergency comes in. It's not just a huge threat, because it actually could be the end for all of us, and therefore it's a threat to the wealthy and the elites, but it's actually an opportunity to change the whole thing, because we can't go on as we are. So I mean, that's why it's such an extraordinary moment to be alive. It's like, well, we either crack this or we're through, so let's crack it. That's really the approach that I think Robin takes, and certainly we take in Extinction Rebellion. It's like, face up to the seriousness of this. If you really see how serious it is, then we can make the kind of transformations that lots of us have been hoping for or working for over decades, but actually weren't possible because some people thought they could get away with it. This is showing you can't get away with it. No. Are you going to come on our side, or are you going to stay on that side? Stay on that side, we're through.
It's sort of crunch time.
Crunch time, but that's why we need the kind of on the streets blockading and, you know, taking it really seriously that way, not expecting those with power to do anything, but making sure people in general realise that there's a force here to be reckoned with. We need to actually rise up in that sense.
Yeah, and Robin, I mean, it's very interesting talking to Robin when he was in here to talk about the plan, because he's obviously feels really strongly how much he himself has benefited from just being involved in it, you know, getting more acquainted with the details, seeing what's possible, and you know, really strongly message from him saying that, you know, it's made him a more positive, it's left him in a more positive mental state.
Absolutely, because we don't realise how disabling it is to be living in this world where you kind of feel like you can't redo anything about it, and you may do your bit, but actually the overall situation is going way downhill, and that is totally, you know, depressing for everybody, even if they pretend they can push it out of their mind. So actually, if you face it, if you engage with it, if you see what you can do, suddenly the world transforms. It's a much, much better place to be in that sense.
Yeah, that was, Lena was talking about that. We had Lena Svedlow from from Edinburgh undergraduate, and I heard her talking at the launch, and I did find it moving, and partly I found it moving because when I was her age, I was an undergraduate at Edinburgh University, and she was just talking about, you know, the kind of how you can get disheartened. Well, it's stronger than disheartened and dispirited. It's depressed.
Absolutely. And it's despairing.
For her, despairing, and absolutely. For her, you know, becoming an activist and getting involved more has helped turn that.
Yes, I mean, it just does. Around. It's a really wonderful thing to do. And it's not, I mean, you could think of that as a kind of displacement activity, something to do to kind of, you know, look, I'm engaged, so it's nothing to do with me. But it's not like that. It's like, if you take on the enormity of the challenge, you can then see the enormity of the transition that's possible.
So it's empowering?
Totally empowering, yeah. But only if you... The paradox is, it's only if you let yourself realise how awful it is that it's empowering. So people kind of push that out of their minds. I don't want to think about that, as if that'll make them feel better. Actually think about it, look at it, and look at how much we need to change and see how we can change. And the beauty of what Robin's been doing is looking at, actually, well, how do we do that in Scotland?
Yeah.
How do we make that transition? And I guess we're looking now globally, in a sense. How do we make this transition globally? So we're starting off a whole process now of working from kind of face-to-face conversations through to national-level assemblies. How do we get a global citizens' assembly that makes the kind of decisions that governments are incapable of making? So we need something that's even more ambitious than just a national-level thing. We need to be creating something that's quite fundamental in that way.
So what form would that citizens' assembly take? How would you get people to come to it? And
yeah, sure. Okay, so, I mean...
Sorry, it's meant to be Marlene that's interviewing you.
No, that's fine.
I'm
just sitting here avoiding the drips. I'm fine.
We're going to get in a wee hat.
Okay, so in, you know, at a national level, you know, Extinction Rebellion from this time last year was pushing for a climate citizens assembly. We were pushing for the government to have a climate citizens assembly. That wasn't really taken seriously. If you remember back in March last year, the Green Party pushed for an emergency declaration of Parliament in the Holyrood, and that was voted down by everybody else. 3 weeks later, after we'd had these huge demonstrations, both on North Bridge, blocking North Bridge, which I'm in court on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for that.
Oh, are you?
Oh, yeah, I tell you, it's just... Anyway, that's fine. But, you know, having that blockade, which I never would have thought I'd blockade... I've blockaded at Faz Lane and places, that seems fine. But to blockade your own people... Do you know what I mean? Blockading North Bridge, that felt like a really outrageous thing to
do.
You're getting in people's way, you're stopping ordinary people, but it just felt like, actually, we need to take responsibility ourselves. We can't, it's not them. They'll never do anything unless we actually go, we demand this. And over those few weeks, everything changed. And actually, after that, Nicola Sturgeon declared an emergency and the UK Parliament did the rest of it. Of course, they've done nothing serious about it, but they did nevertheless declare that we're in an emergency. And that was really, really vital. So that then led to us pushing for a climate citizens assembly, and the Greens were on board, and Labour, and then SNP too. And then we got that. So the climate citizens assembly is going to be starting in this autumn. You know, Scottish Government's Climate Citizens Assembly.
That's good. And in the meantime, they've also got another kind of update on the climate targets in Holyrood as well, which, you know, didn't go as far as, well, certainly didn't go as far as the Greens wanted, but went a bit further than they started off with.
Absolutely.
So I suppose that's how these things work.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, what you want is, I mean, targets are one thing. I mean, they're saying you'll do something. It's then what your action is. But they're not to be taken lightly. Targets are important, and statements of emergency are important. It's only if you believe people will do anything because of them, then you're foolish. If you think they're pointless, that's foolish too, because it's great to have big statements of intent, but then we need to hold them to it. So, you know, what's happening up in Fife just now with the flaring and all the rest of it, you know,
so
the stuff
that's
on Common Space this morning. I mean, that, I would say Common Space, just such a fantastic... That morning brew just a fantastic digest of news. It's just such a superb... Yeah. I mean, that's where I get my news now. It's like, OK, I can trust this, and it gives a really, really clear picture of what's going on and what's happening at Mossmorran now, and the call out to the ministers to come from Holyrood and actually get there and talk to people rather than avoid it.
That was brought up in the chamber yesterday at Holyrood,
great.
Isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
During First Minister's question.
Yes, because SEPA's just like, it's a neutered body, so it's supposed to be the Environmental Protection Watchdog, but it's not. It's got the people in it who are from the industry itself, mm-hmm. and who aren't actually mm-hmm. taking the issue seriously. So I think, again, it's people on the ground who are really demanding that this changes and shifts. And that's where the power is. It's with people on the ground. When they demand, then things change. When they don't demand, nothing changes.
Yeah. It's strange. I remember when SEPA got set up, and it was set up in what seemed like a pretty, good way from the point of view of the science. And I haven't followed it enough closely enough to know quite what's. But the balance has shifted. I'm sure there's a lot of scientists still in SEPA who really, really want to go on and do these things.
But this is what you find in all these institutions. I found that because I work in Africa, so World Bank, United Nations Development Project, all these sort of governments, there's always brilliant people. It's not that they're not brilliant in there, but they feel timid, they feel disempowered.
They're sort of hidebound.
They are. So you've got these fantastically big institutions, you think, oh, yeah. That's powerful. You get in there, and each person in there, they're really good, but they feel like they can't do what they're supposed to do. So there's just something about how do you liberate people to actually be, like you say, those scientists in there will be brilliant, but they know there's somebody above them who's saying, well, actually, we can't really say that for political reasons, or we can't, there's that kind of the timidity that comes in, which they don't mean, but they're saying, well, got to be realistic, and we have to be realistic differently. We have to just tell the truth right the way through SEPA.
And I mean, I think it's also just come back to what you said about in a way you have to face the worst of it.
Yeah,
you have to face the truth of what's yeah. involved, which it's not that the planet's at stake, nor is life on the planet at stake, but perhaps human beings' place on it
absolutely
is at
absolutely.
stake. In a way it's interesting, isn't it? You really face up to that, mm. and then perhaps a chink opens up.
Well, then you're fearless, because actually, if once you see that, uh-huh. that's what you're up against, yeah. not your boss telling you shouldn't say this or whatever else. So, all those messages about, well, why are you saying this and it's like, I don't care about that nonsense. Just tell the truth and tell the truth honestly. And so that it does change it really dramatically. If you face up to what's going on, you're then free to live your life. Or do your job if you're in SEPA or whatever else.
I was reading about the Extinction Rebellion protest in Cambridge mm-hmm. in the week, mm-hmm. and was it Trinity College's lawn?
It was Trinity College.
Dear, poor old Trinity, they'll not be happy. But, it's grass, it'll grow again.
What happened there?
They dug up, they didn't dig it up, but they dug through the lawn in
but
Trinity College.
It's more than that, you're not supposed to walk on that grass unless you're a professor. So these ecological issues are not just about the environment, they're about the inequality and mm-hmm. the systems of domination that are causing it. So they were digging it up to kind of say, look, take this seriously.
Yeah. It's a symbol.
It's a symbol, exactly.
I mean, I was thinking, oh, it's just Trinity College, it's just a grass, it'll grow. I was always thinking, if they ever dare to do it on the hallowed turf at Lord's, I'm not going to be quite so straightforward about it, because I'm a bit of a cricket fan.
Yeah, but that's not, they weren't doing it. No, I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't, because that's an insight, that would be insane. I mean,
not something the anti-apartheid campaigners did back in the day?
They might have, actually.
They dug up cricket grounds, and wow. I mean, that was just like beyond the pale.
It was beyond the pale.
Can I just ask you a quick question, while I get the chance? James E has asked a question in our... people send in questions, and he's asking you, Justin, what advice can you give to people who might want to get involved but they're unsure how to go about it? I'm not sure if he means to get involved in your actual Extinction Rebellion, perhaps.
Or... Well, Extinction Rebellion, obviously the easiest way is to go on the internet and uh-huh. search Extinction Rebellion Scotland, and you've got your meetings and when they're mm-hmm. happening and where in Edinburgh, Glasgow, Dundee, Aberdeen and Highlands and so on. So that's the way to get involved
that's
in that way.
But
also
way.
Getting involved doesn't mean you have to get arrested. So just to be clear about that, because people often, what you see visibly is people getting arrested, but there's loads of other work. And just now we're starting off an engaged listening project, which is about really listening to where other people's problems are, trying to understand where they're coming from, and not trying to persuade anybody to take on the climate seriously, but for us to try and really understand what the other issues are, how they intersect with the climate issue, what we can do together. So that's a simple conversation with people around you, uh-huh. asking people what do they see as the biggest challenges around them, what do they see happening to address them, what do they want happening to address them, mm-hmm. those three questions. So if he wants to get involved in that kind of level of work,
so there's
that's
all sorts of ways,
yes.
People people, absolutely, if they're not maybe up for getting to jail.
No, and also even in those situations, you can be a legal support person who's observing what's happening. You can be a welfare person, making sure.
Go to court. Witness.
I'm in court Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Edinburgh. You want to come along there, mate? I'll be there.
Is that in Edinburgh?
In Edinburgh Chamber Street, yeah. Up in front of the sheriff again.
I mean, I was still thinking about Cambridge, because as well as the Trinity College lawn, there was also road, there was blockades. I think it was down at Trumpington Road and round about that end of the city. And I picked up one comment that was from one of the blockaders, who a woman who was anticipating getting arrested. And she said, this is a quote, "I've lost so much hope that I have surpassed my depression, and my soul will only feel like I'm doing the most I can when I'm in a jail cell or giving up my life." And I went, well, that's a bit, it's very, pretty strong. She was arrested. She was arrested later on for spraying paint at a university building, which is being funded by a petroleum company. Yeah. Well, partly funded, you know.
Sure,
but
it's
galling that that's still happening, especially at universities.
Well, I mean, I work in Africa with forest communities, like I've said before, and that when their land's being taken from them, you know, this is the lands they've been taken care of forever and been taken care of forever, and they have a very, one guy there, I said to him, why does it matter to you to stay on your land rather than be you know, moved somewhere else? He said, imagine that you were asked to be moved from your family and to go and have a wife and kids elsewhere, but they're not your wife, not your kids. That's what it's like for us to move from our land. And I realised the depth of connection they have with the land, and they were saying, we will stay here, not fight, because they're not violent, the few people I work with, but we will be killed rather than move from our land. And I think that's now the feeling that's spreading right across, so that people like the woman you just quoted, you know, are realising that actually this land, our land, the whole place, the planet, or the particular bit that you're identifying with, is under real threat, and actually you will do everything you can, bar violence, because we're utterly peaceful, we'll do everything we can to be able to stop that. And it's that deep sense of tragedy of what's happening, and also tragedy always means it's unnecessary. This doesn't need to be happening. It's not like a meteorite hitting you or something that, you know, got the dinosaurs extinct. This is us unnecessarily doing it to ourselves. It's only inequality that's causing this.
Yeah.
It's nothing else. Yeah. We could just live in a more equal way.
In which part of Africa were you, in different places?
So
or?
I work in the forest belt, but at the moment mostly in Kenya and Congo. So
and do you think your work there has had a big impact on you in terms of your attitude to the kind of activities that you want to take on here?
Well, I kind of grew up, my dad was a Church of Scotland minister in the Iona community, and we moved down from Iona when I was three or four to Notting Hill, when it was a slum in London. It was the worst bit of London for Rachman and the whole awful stuff. So he was right into housing. So I kind of grew up around that Church of Scotland tradition, which is very much around taking care of each other, but also respect for the natural world. And if you listen to the hymns there and the prayers, they're all very, very earth-centred. You know, so though I'm not a Christian in that official sense, I have to say now, in terms of, you know, I'm very deeply kind of grew up through that, and that sense of caring for others is really where you get your deepest sense of self from. You're most fulfilled when you're taking care of others. That it's just reality, you know that. Mm. So there's that. So then when I started being an anthropologist, and I did go to Trinity College, there you go, where the lawn's being dug up, that's why I know about that. You know, I discovered anthropology. I never heard about anthropology. What's that? You know, I went to do English and changed it. Then I discovered this subject called anthropology. It's like, what the hell? This is showing you how other people live, and you can, there's amazingly other ways. You don't have to be human in this completely unequal system we got. You can be human in all these diverse ways. So yes, going out to Congo at that point, lived out in the rainforest with hunter-gatherers for a year and a half.
I mean, goodness.
It was extraordinary, and just kind of like, and the kind of equality they've got there, and the way in which men and women have roles, but they can swap them around, and the level of dad's engagement in childcare, and the level of humour. And I mean, a friend of mine was working with a group where they had the same word for play as they have for ritual. Like, it's the same thing going on.
Good.
So kind of places where you don't have hierarchies of what's important and not important. You actually, everything matters. So yes, being an anthropologist, working in those areas has really rejuvenated me, and kind of going, okay, it's perfectly possible to live differently in a way that really does take care in that way. So what's gone wrong here? Why do we live in this particular way? And obviously colonialism was a big part of that. And then, you know, capitalism and other forms that have come from that have been a big part of that. But it doesn't need to be like that.